You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. Most things are outside of our control, but with every difficult situation, there's always something we can do to make things better. This week, we have stories from people who've found something they can control while everything else seems up in the air. When Kathy arrived in Australia, getting her job was about more than just paying the rent. It gave her a way to connect with a community and find some stability during a time in her life when stability has been hard to find. Producer Josie Steele met with Kathy to tag along with her for her workday.
Every Friday afternoon, Kathy makes her way to the same place.
Been on 4:30 every Friday.
Yeah.
It's a 1 hour job, but every week.
Yeah. Kathy's job is in a small office on the outskirts of Melbourne's CBD.
Now I'll take you to the front.
Okay.
Normally, I used to go to the back.
We can go to the back. I can do what you normally do.
Kathy is here to clean.
Dusting, wiping down benches, tables, vacuum, and that's it.
She's thorough. No bit of dust escapes her notice. And if you get in her way, she will kindly pretend you weren't in the way, but then go back and clean that bit when she thinks you aren't looking.
I'm so sorry.
Kathy cleans houses and businesses all over Melbourne every day of the week. But she's not your average cleaner. She's a little different. And her clients seem to know that.
Now, I left a tin. There's some chocolates there for you to have some.
Thank you.
Thank you. Was that a present for you?
They always give me chocolate.
They always what?
Give me chocolate.
Oh.
Kathy is from Papua New Guinea. She's been in Australia for about 5 years and is seeking asylum after she was forced to flee her home because of domestic violence.
I ran away from my husband, took all my girls with me to Australia. I brought my girls with me. I have 4 girls. I have a grandson from my firstborn daughter, and the second one, she finished her year 12 this year. The third one is doing year 11, and the young one is doing year 8. My grandson is 2 years and 4 months old. Yeah, he's cute.
I first met Kathy at the ASRC, the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre, a not-for-profit organisation in Melbourne's West. The day we met, the office was teeming with people, managers, caseworkers, refugees and volunteers. And Kathy was a little nervous of the microphone.
For me, it's my first time experiencing this.
You'll be fine.
The ASRC works with people seeking asylum in Australia, anyone who needs help, which is why it's so busy. And they helped Kathy when she first arrived 5 years ago.
I feel, scared. I didn't feel comfortable being here, talking to people. I didn't have that courage to talk, ask for help, and I was too shy. Yeah, but with the ASRC, I got much help with them.
The ASRC made sure Kathy had enough food. They helped her find schools that her daughters could attend, and they helped her meet people in similar situations to her own. And as she waited to find out if she and her family could stay permanently in Australia, they helped her to start working. They hired her as a cleaner with the ASRC Cleaning Enterprise.
It's a good job for me, I support my kids through my job, paying my rent and all necessary stuff through this job. As long as your home is clean, you feel good, feel safe. So I think I enjoy the job I do.
ASRC Cleaning is one of the two social enterprises of the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre. We exist to create pathways to employment for people seeking asylum through delivering professional domestic and commercial cleaning services.
This is Floor. She's the business manager for ASRC Cleaning, and she's really passionate about the work they do.
It's not only a job, it's help people to be independent, get like a sense of autonomy to manage their life. A lot of asylum seekers coming from very highly educated background, but because of the language barrier and lack of the network, it's so challenging for them to get the first job.
Floor was a refugee herself, so she knows firsthand the difficulty and the uncertainty that comes with starting over in a new country. She gets it.
So I have the lived experience, and I started as a member in ASRC. It was 2015. I just was looking for a job, and I heard about this organization. So it's such a great opportunity to go if I can get some help. And then soon I just was fascinated with the amazing job that the ASRC doing. And as soon as I found a job somewhere else, I came as a volunteer to ASRC 2 times per week.
Hiring a cleaner through the ASRC is about more than just having a clean home or office. It's about supporting a community and connecting with people who would otherwise be struggling.
I know a lot of people, when they finish the job with us, they come back to me and they give me like the idea how amazing was that. Even they cleaning the toilet, they say, I love to do that. It was okay for me. Every job I did, I love it because I knew that I have a purpose in my life and I can pay my bill at the end of support my family. Mostly people say, I want a sense of belonging. If I don't have a job, I don't feel I belong to this community. I think most of the people I work with are so happy, so they get their first job.
Kathy's favourite part of working is the people she meets. That community she's now a part of.
Mostly I enjoy meeting different people, meeting friends through them. I meet a lot through this job. I meet a lot of friends. And during Christmas periods and Mother's Day and all this stuff, I used to get this, the gifts and the Christmas cards and all that. I feel that I'm special to them or something like that. I feel more special.
After 5 years in Australia, Kathy and her family are still waiting to hear if their application for asylum has been accepted. She doesn't know how much longer they'll be waiting or what outcome to expect. And that makes it incredibly hard to plan for the future.
What do you want for the long term?
In the long term, I want my girls to be a better person, live a better life. I don't want them to live the life that I've been through. That's why I brought them here, to live a better life. I'll be a happy grandmother and a mom to them.
After our chat at the ASRC, Kathy let me tag along to her Friday afternoon job. She was less nervous this time.
People are going to think you're famous, me walking beside you with a mic.
No. Laughing. Don't record me.
I'm laughing. My name is Josie. I'm following Kathy around.
Yes.
Thank you for letting
fine.
Me come around.
No, not at all.
Thank you.
She's going to help me today.
Yeah, she's going to put it to work. No, just pretend I'm not here.
While she worked, Kathy opened up a little bit about what it feels like to be waiting so long to find out if she can stay.
Now it's getting tougher and tougher. It's the new government's change brings new system. New policies and all this stuff.
So you don't kind of know what to expect?
I don't know. Good or bad. Just fingers crossed. I'm gonna make a noise now.
Okay.
With all of the uncertainty she's facing, no matter how long she's left waiting, Kathy knows her cleaning job is secure.
Hi, Josie. Can you help me answer?
Yeah.
She'll have it as long as she needs it.
We're done. My grandson always says, we're done. Good job. I better take my chocolate before I forget.
That's right. They gave you chocolate. What does it say?
You want some?
No, I'm okay. What does the note say?
Please enjoy some of this.
Florentines.
Oh, wow. Fancy.
Thank you. I better put it in the bag. Oh, you help me carry this.
Yeah.
That story was produced by Josie Steele. Ryan Pemberton was the supervising producer. Christine knew she wanted to experience sex, but didn't think she ever would. At 35 years of age, no one had ever raised the subject with her. A content warning, this story deals with some heavy topics, including mentions of suicide.
Christine Priest thinks we should talk about sex more often, especially in the disability community, where it can be treated like it doesn't exist. Silence about sex has caused her a lot of anguish.
I went through suicidal thoughts, depression, anxiety. I had a nervous breakdown because of all around sex, you know, and I look back at it and I'm not ashamed of it. If I can just get that one person to say, look, you know, that's me too, maybe I can get some help in having sex and looking after my own sexual health care. I didn't lose my virginity until about 5 years ago, and I'm now 40. I was very, insecure. I thought, you know, I didn't love myself. I hated myself because I never thought I'd have sex. I never thought I'd experience an orgasm.
And why didn't you feel those things were an option for you?
Because the incontinence I held back because I was very embarrassed. So I felt really alone.
So had you talked to medical professionals before about your desire to have sex?
Never. I kept it really bottled up until I finally cracked.
Why didn't you talk to anybody before medical about it?
It's embarrassing for us because it's not spoken about with people with disabilities. And I think the assumptions is a huge thing. You know, we've got to break through those assumptions. It comes from the medical model of disability where we need to be fixed. We don't have no desire for sex. We shouldn't engage in having kids or, you know, having same-sex relationships or be transgender or see sex workers.
When Christine was at her lowest, a doctor did what seemed miraculous to her. He broke the silence on sex.
He just treated me like another person. He treated me like a person. He forgot about the disability, you know.
This was the turning point for her. This doctor opened the gate for her to talk about sex and her fears around incontinence.
He goes to me, there's lots of people with colostomies have sex. And that was like a ding-dong moment in my brain. It's like, wow, if I had one of those too, I could have sex.
She made the decision right then and there to get a colostomy.
Oh, my God. It has been the best decision I have ever done. I think it's opened doorways for me, you know. My self-esteem is out there. I can go out, have a good time, not worry about it, you know.
So it took care of her biggest fear. But there were still other worries.
What would I feel if I had sex? Because, let's face it, I have spina bifida and you have paralysis. What would sex really feel like for a person like me, you know? Would I actually be fulfilled?
Christine still didn't feel able to talk about these concerns with anyone, but she was determined to find out. And turns out she didn't have to wait too long either.
Well, I was out shopping in a supermarket and there was this other guy. He kept checking me out and, you know, I introduced myself. I said, oh, my name's Christine, and he introduced himself. And, you know, we joined on Facebook that moment. And so that weekend going on, I went to his place, and that day we had sex. That's all I wanted, to feel what it's like to have sex, because I could, because I had a colostomy.
Did you guys have, did you have conversations beforehand? When did you tell him I have colostomy?
No, he didn't find out until I was naked. He did not know, so yeah. And he wasn't ashamed of it or anything. He was very open about it. It's not an identity, you know, it's just another thing on your body. Who cares?
And Christine's fears about whether she would be fulfilled, turns out she didn't need to worry.
I don't know. I can't say, like, what is the normal experience, because everybody experiences sex differently. But for me, it was great. You know, I could feel things, you know. I experienced an orgasm, which was euphoric, you know. We got no sleep that day, mind you.
How did you start to change the way you felt about yourself after having sex?
I started to like myself a lot more. I love myself now. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, stuck up way, but I really like who I am. Yeah, the confidence went skyrocketing, you know. That's how deprived I was of my sexual health.
Considering how integral sex had been to Christine's mental health, I wondered if she thought NDIS had a role to play in this space.
Definitely. I could not agree more, because it's part of your health overall well-being, you know. Just because someone's got no arms, they might be able to intellectually be stimulated or physically by massage or, you know, someone else masturbating them. Sex is a human right, and it should not be excluded from any education, by the court system, by health professionals, nobody. That's your individual right as a person, and you should be empowered to have those sexual rights.
You know, I've met so many people who've said they were pulled out of sex ed.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. People with disabilities do have sex, and we need the knowledge and education to protect ourselves.
Because what do you think the impact of that would be on somebody?
You're socially excluded from society. That's what's happening. You are really disadvantaged, and it shouldn't happen. Not this day and age. Come on. If you don't have the education, it puts you at a high risk of mental health. Sexual health diseases like STDs, sexual assault, because, you know, some guy thinks, oh, you know, she's vulnerable. You know, it shouldn't be like that at all.
Christine is now on a mission to create a world where all people with disability feel safe and empowered to talk about sex. She's fueled by her own past history of suffering and silence.
I didn't have that person. I really didn't have that person to, you know, talk about anything sexually related. But I want to become that person you can do that with. And I am interested in sexual health side of disability and working with health professionals and officers of the court, police officers, and, you know, help to communicate better with people with disabilities. And I have this community where everybody feels safe about talking about sex. You know, that's my calling in life.
That story was produced by Carrie Shear for JFA Purple Orange, a social profit organisation for people with a disability. Christine has just finished a graduate certificate in disability with plans to undertake a research degree related to sex and disability. You can hear more stories like Christine's by visiting purpleorange.org.au. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Maddie McQueen. All the Best is about training emerging Australian storytellers in the art of audio. If you'd like to be a part of the show, you can start by pitching to us at allthebestradio.com. We'll pair you with one of our supervising producers to help make your story. When Lucy was heading from Melbourne to Canberra during the bushfire season, she thought she'd do the responsible thing and find herself a P2 mask to protect her from the smoke. What she didn't account for is how tricky it would be to find one.
This summer, Australia has seen some of the worst bushfires on record. Walls of flame tore through tinder dry land and thick smoke blanketed cities. In Australia's capital of Canberra, it was particularly bad.
We begin with breaking news, and a state of emergency lasting 7 days will be declared across New South Wales from 9 a.m. tomorrow, as well as a statewide fire ban.
An elderly woman has died at Canberra Airport, reportedly suffering from respiratory distress after stepping off the plane onto smoke-blanketed tarmac.
The department responsible for managing disasters and emergencies will close its Canberra offices for the next 2 days as bushfire smoke blankets the capital.
It burned your eyes, it made your stomach feel sick, and it raised everybody's anxiety levels, especially Lucy's.
The smoke had gotten so thick and it was at some sort of ridiculous hazard level.
Lucy Trella works in Canberra, but over the Christmas holidays, she had been back in her home state of Victoria visiting friends and family. The day before she was to fly back to Canberra, she started seeing reports that people were buying face masks to wear because the smoke had gotten so bad.
I didn't think it was that big of a deal, really. But that morning when I woke up, it was everywhere. The fact that we needed face masks if we were going back to Canberra. So I thought, that's fine. I had the day off. All I was going to do was have dinner with friends and then fly out the next morning. Plenty of time to grab a face mask.
Her last day in Melbourne started out pretty relaxed.
Yeah, slept in and then went and had coffee with friends. It was pretty nice in Melbourne, like clean air, sun was shining, that kind of thing. So I went and had coffee with friends, my last good coffee. And then I went back to the Airbnb where I was staying and just chill out for a while. I watched some Netflix and then decided I would go shopping.
Not mask shopping though, clothes shopping. In fact, buying a mask was the last thing on Lucy's mind. She figured she'd just pick one up later.
I went to Melbourne Central but didn't find anything I wanted. This was around 2 p.m, I think. So then I figured I'd start looking around for a mask. Well, first I looked up what kind of mask I needed because people were saying you couldn't just use, you know, surgical masks. You needed a P2 mask.
A P2 mask is not the kind of surgical mask that a doctor wears. It's a heavy-duty mask, the kind that you see tradies wear when they're cutting through concrete. It has a valve at the front that acts as a filter.
So I looked up where I could buy one of those, and Bunnings was the best bet. It was a Bunnings not far from where I was in Collingwood, so I just jumped on a tram to go get one.
But when she got there, she found that
they were sold out. The guy said they'd sold out that morning, so I asked if he checked to see if any other Bunnings had some, and pretty much nowhere in the CBD area, or even those close to the city suburbs, had any masks.
Lucy was starting to feel a bit stressed. Dinner wasn't too far away, and the next closest Bunnings that had the right mask was in a suburb called Box Hill, which is more than an hour away on public transport. And the reason there were no masks anywhere nearby? Well, the smoke wasn't just affecting Canberra. The wind had blown bushfire smoke towards Melbourne, and people were in a panic.
I remember I texted some friends to say I didn't really know what to do because I didn't want to go back to Canberra without a mask. People had been posting on Facebook and Instagram about how breathing the smoke was making them feel sick. And in Canberra, I was walking. I had to be outside to get to work and walk a fair bit to get to the bus station. So yeah, I was getting stressed. They told me to look at Officeworks, and on their website, quite a few Officeworks said they still had masks. So I went to the closest one to me. They were out of stock. I was told an Officeworks maybe 1 kilometer away had some, so I went there, but they were out of stock. I was getting really frustrated. Eventually, I called someone at a head office or something who told me that even though the websites were showing stock, everywhere was sold out.
This stress that Lucy was feeling was being felt around the country. The amount of emergency warnings across the different states continued to climb, and stories of houses, farms, and lives lost filled the airwaves. Every day, the updates were getting worse.
I'm very sad to have to report that there are at least 17 people that at this stage we cannot account for. Their whereabouts is unknown to us, plus there is one person confirmed as deceased. And whilst Victoria Police have not been through the official identification processes, I think it's pretty clear that the Roberts family have identified Mr. Roberts, and we send our condolences, our deepest condolences to their family.
I was super stressed. I just kept thinking about having to be back in Canberra with no mask. I mean, at that point, the bushfires were getting really close to Canberra City, coming over the ridge, and it looked like they were going to burn for a while.
Lucy decided the best thing to do was to push back her dinner plans and do whatever it would take to get a mask.
I called that Bunnings that was out in Box Hill, and they told me they had like two left and that they would hold onto them for me. So I pushed back my dinner plans and went out to Box Hill.
Now arriving at Box Hill.
After the hour-long train ride, she finally got to the Box Hill Bunnings and found that...
they had the masks. I actually found out they had three, so I bought all of them. By that time, my dinner had been pushed back to like 8 p.m. and I was sweaty and tired from running around the city. But I had those masks, so that was such a relief.
That wasn't the end of things, though. Because Lucy had been a bit panicked about the whole situation, she hadn't actually checked that the masks she'd bought were in fact the right kind of P2 mask.
It wasn't until I was back on the train going back into the city for dinner that I realised they may not actually be the right masks to stop smoke inhalation. So that was just another stressor because I had paid something like $70 for these three masks. On the back of the package of those masks, it said P2, which was the recommended mask, but the details only talked about dust inhalation. I got to dinner and I wasn't in a very good mood because I'd been running around and was really annoyed at the whole situation. But I told my friends about the whole thing. And one of my friends, her dad works in construction. So we actually gave him a call to ask about whether these particular masks would help. And he reassured me that the P2 mask that I'd bought would actually do the trick. So that was all good. That made me feel a lot better about going back to Canberra.
Lucy flew back to Canberra the next morning with her masks at the ready. But despite her protective gear, she flew into a dark, smoky haze that would linger for weeks to come.
It was really, really smoky and gross. The sky was brown. We had to keep all our doors and windows closed. It constantly just smelled like there was barbecue going on everywhere. But that barbecue was also making me feel sick. I wore the masks whenever I was outside, and I think it helped a bit. Probably gave me peace of mind more than anything. And you know, the worst part is that that was only one part of summer. There's still a lot more time left in summer for more bushfires. And just imagine if this gets worse.
That story was produced by Jordan Fennell. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SIN and 3RRR in Melbourne. This episode was mixed and compiled by Alina Godwin. Our executive producer is Ryan Pemberton. Jordan Fennell is our Victorian State Coordinator. The All the Best community coordinators are Chloe Gillespie and Danny Stewart. Our SIN community coordinator is Lee Robinson. Matilda Fay is our social media producer, and I'm your host, Maddie McQueen. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. We're heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, and we're made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can find out more at cbf.org.au. You can find all of our episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe.